Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Good morning. It has been a long, tense night in Ukraine.
Russia intensifying its assault in what's being called a massive attack. It is January the 26th. This is Today. Barrage. Russia launches a new wave of missiles targeting several major cities in Ukraine, sending people scrambling for shelter. The escalation comes just hours after the U.S. announced it will provide tanks to Ukrainian troops. We're live on the ground with all the overnight developments. Wicked weather. A winter storm sweeps across the Northeast after dumping several inches of snow in the Midwest and spawning tornadoes down south.
Hold on, it's going to get wild.
And it's not finished yet. Al has the forecast. Warning signs missed. New allegations that school officials ignored repeated calls for action in the hours before a six-year-old student shot a teacher inside a classroom.
This should have never happened. It was preventable.
The school superintendent fired as the fallout grows. We're live with the latest. Turbulence. Southwest Airlines now facing a federal investigation into the holiday meltdown that impacted millions of travelers. Did the airline knowingly overbook flights? What investigators are saying. Those stories plus real-life hero. We're learning more about Marvel star Jeremy Renner's tragic snowplow accident. Officials revealing he was run over trying to save his nephew. We're live with new details. Today, Thursday, January 26th. 2023.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Today. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. Okay, that one's a first. What is the guy doing wandering around the court?
I don't understand what happened. But by the way, it gives me an idea. We could order food and have it delivered right here as well.
It could happen the show. I think that's a good idea.
Oh, good idea.
We're on to something.
Chick-fil-A, if you're listening.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A. Oh, we've got an order here from Mr. Roker. Well, you know what? He's busy. There's a lot of weather to talk about. We need to feed him. We've got this massive winter storm causing chaos across the Northeast overnight. This is a live look at snowy Wrigley Field in Chicago. Going to be a while until we get baseball weather, that's for sure. Today, some areas are bracing for more as we head into the weekend. And the aforementioned Al has got the full forecast in just a moment.
But we are going to start in Ukraine under what's being called a, quote, massive attack this morning. Just hours after the United States announced it is sending more than 30 tanks to the region in its war against Russia. For the very latest, we go to Raf Sanchez. He is in Kharkiv this morning. Hey, Raf, good morning.
Hoda, good morning. The Kremlin says the West's decision to send tanks means they are now directly involved in the war, and this appears to be the Kremlin's response. A barrage of 55 missiles fired at targets all across this country, according to the Ukrainian Air Force. They say they are shooting down most of them, but some, unfortunately, are getting through. Here in Kharkiv, you can see the damage caused by previous Russian strikes, and the sirens have been wailing in this city all morning as civilians here brace for the worst.
This morning, Vladimir Putin sending a message with a wave of strikes across Ukraine. Dozens of Russian missiles and self-destructing drones targeting Kyiv and other cities. More than 10 people killed, according to Ukrainian officials. The attack just hours after President Biden reversed course and announced he'll give 31 Abrams tanks to Ukraine.
It will enhance the Ukraine's capacity to defend its territory and achieve its strategic objectives. The Abrams tanks are the most capable tanks in the world.
The Kremlin responding, these tanks will burn down just like all the other ones. Weighing in at 70 tons and armed with a 120-millimeter cannon, the Abrams has long been the iron fist of the U.S. military. But it's difficult to maintain and could be months before it reaches the battlefield. Ukraine instead hoping Germany's Leopard 2 tanks will arrive in time to head off a fresh Russian offensive, possibly in the coming weeks, according to Ukrainian officials. President Zelensky saying, a sense of relief comes only after the weapons which our partners give us are already being used by our army. Zelensky overnight also meeting with the UN's top official for refugees. We caught up with him as he surveyed the damage from previous Russian bombing in Kharkiv.
Every time is as painful and as frustrating and as horrible as the first time.
Nearly a year into the war, 8 million Ukrainians are refugees outside their country, and millions more are displaced inside it. Among them, 32-year-old Irina Prokofieva, who depends on aid to care for her baby son, Makar. The 9-month-old born weeks into the war in a hospital also treating wounded Russian troops. It's impossible to buy anything here, she says. People left with almost nothing, sharing what little they have.
And Raf, it's hard to believe we are nearing the 1-year mark since the start of this war. So are strikes like this something we could see more of going forward?
It's very possible, Hoda. Vladimir Putin has shown he is very comfortable with diplomacy by missile. He often responds to political developments by retaliating militarily. Now, President Zelensky was asked yesterday, would he be open to peace talks with President Putin? He said, it's not interesting for me, not interesting to meet, not interesting to speak. So, Hoda, no sign of any talks anytime soon.
All right. Raf Sanchez for us there in Ukraine. Raf, thank you.
Now to that winter storm that's brought a little bit of everything to a lot of folks. It left its mark on the South, the Midwest, and now it is making a mess of the morning commute in parts of the Northeast. Al's got his forecast. That's in just a moment. But let's get it started with NBC National correspondent Gabe Gutierrez, who's in the elements there in Concord, New Hampshire this morning. Hi, Gabe. Good morning.
Hi, Savannah. Good morning. More snow here overnight, and this after another winter storm blew through here earlier this week. Now, that snow has turned into rain in the last few hours, and as you mentioned, parts of the Northeast now dealing with a very messy morning commute. Now, overnight, powerful wind and rain slammed into New Jersey, knocking down trees, and some 8 million people in northern New England are now under winter weather alerts. Now, it was a travel mess across much of the country yesterday. A tractor-trailer in Detroit lost control and crashed on the interstate. Now, down south, there was major flooding in Alabama, and tens of thousands of people in Arkansas are still without power. Damage is still being assessed after the National Weather Service confirmed an EF3 tornado slammed into just outside the Houston area, packing winds of up to 140 miles an hour. Now, there have been at least 158 tornado reports this month alone, making this the most active January on record. Still, it's been a highly unusual winter in some parts of the country. Major cities in the Northeast, like New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C., have seen almost no measurable snowfall at all. In New York City, it's actually been 11 months since there's been measurable snowfall. Clearly, though, a different story here in New Hampshire, Savannah.
All right, Gabe, thank you very much.
I was bringing Mr. Roker tracking this storm. It's on the way out.
That's right, guys. You can see we've got a mix of precipitation as you move up into down east Maine. We're also looking at wet weather moving off the New England coast. Wrap around snow showers and lake effect snow is starting to develop. So we do still have winter weather advisories for 7 million people, especially the leeward side of the Great Lakes and up into interior sections of the Northeast and New England. A little more snowfall, heaviest amounts, probably 8 to 10 inches between Erie and Buffalo. Also, the leeward side of those Great Lakes and up into northern Maine. We've got another clipper coming in today, bringing scattered snow bands across the upper plains. Gusty winds of up to 50 miles per hour likely. Then tomorrow, that storm speeds through the Great Lakes, bringing some more snow, triggering those lake effect snow showers again with strong winds. Generally speaking, 1 to 2 inches, the heavier amounts out back into the western plains. Guys?
All right. Thank you, Al.
We got new details this morning about the Virginia teacher who police say was shot in the classroom by her 6-year-old student. Her attorney says school officials ignored repeated warnings that could have prevented that shooting. NBC's Stephanie Gosk is here with the latest. Steph, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Savannah. Well, investigators try to figure out how a little boy got his hands on a gun in the first place. An attorney for the teacher who was shot says 4 different employees warned the school administration at Richneck Elementary the day of the shooting. One teacher even saying the 6-year-old had brought the gun out to recess, but nothing was done.
This morning, the superintendent for Virginia's Newport News School District has lost his job less than 3 weeks after one of his teachers was shot by her first grade student.
Effective February 1st, 2023, Dr. Parker will be relieved of his duties as superintendent of Newport News Public Schools.
This follows the resignation of the Richneck Elementary School assistant principal. An attorney for Abigail Zwirner, the teacher who was shot, says her client will file a lawsuit, saying the school ignored multiple warnings the day of the shooting that the six-year-old had a gun.
What did administrators do? Did administrators call the police? No. Did administrators lock down the school? No. Did the administrators evacuate the building? No. Did they confront the student? No.
Zwirner's attorney laying out a timeline of the day. Just after 11 a.m., Zwirner herself told an administrator the first grader threatened to beat up another student.
They didn't remove the student from the classroom. The school administration failed to act.
At 12:30, according to the attorney, another teacher reported she searched the boy's book bag looking for a gun and believed he may have put it in his pocket and taken it outside to recess.
The administrator downplayed the report from the teacher and the possibility of a gun, saying, and I quote, "Well, he has little pockets."
Shortly after 1, Zwirner's attorney says a teacher reported that a student said the six-year-old showed him the gun and threatened to use it. Finally, a fourth employee asked to search the boy, but was told to wait for the day to end. Zwirner was shot roughly an hour later, seriously wounded in her hand and chest, but still managed to escort about 20 students out of her class to safety. Earlier this month, the school superintendent did acknowledge at least one administrator was notified of a possible weapon.
A source close to the investigation tells NBC News that before she was shot, Zwirner texted a loved one that day and, quote, showed her frustration over the school's lack of response. NBC News has not seen the actual text message. As for the district, a representative for Newport News Schools says they cannot comment on the coming lawsuit at this time because the school division is investigating still.
Have we learned any more about how Abby Zwirner, the teacher, is doing? She was shot in the chest and I think the hand as well.
Yeah, the good news is she's out of the hospital. Her attorney says, though, she's between surgeries. She actually still has a bullet lodged in her chest. But also on top of the physical damage that she's trying to recover from, you can imagine there's a lot of psychological struggle that she's going through right now as well.
She's been through so much and her family too. Stephanie, thank you.
Thank you, Steph. All right, now to a new federal probe into the popular app Snapchat. The FBI investigating whether drug dealers are using it to sell deadly pills containing fentanyl. NBC senior national correspondent Kate Snow has reported extensively on families impacted by this fentanyl crisis. She joins us now with these brand new developments. Hey, Kate, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Hoda. NBC News has learned the FBI is investigating Snapchat. Critics say Snapchat knows drug dealers are using the app to sell pills to teens and young people, pills that can kill. Agents have been speaking to families who've lost kids that way. Many want Snapchat to be held accountable.
This morning, unprecedented action by the Justice Department in the fight against fake pills containing fentanyl. The FBI now interviewing parents of children who connected with dealers on Snapchat and died after taking pills with a deadly dose of fentanyl. That's according to a person directly familiar with the matter. The Justice Department would officially neither confirm nor deny the existence of a criminal investigation. The potential criminal investigation comes alongside a civil lawsuit filed on behalf of families of victims. That suit slams the app as the, quote, Snap drug cartel, which facilitates and profits from selling lethal drugs to young users.
Something has to be done.
One of the plaintiffs, Amy Neville, testified on Capitol Hill Wednesday about the fentanyl crisis. Her 14-year-old son, Alexander, died after she says he unknowingly took pills he got on Snapchat.
Families like mine wake up every single morning finding their kids dead in their bedrooms, and they're gone because apps like Snapchat make these dangers accessible to our kids.
Victim advocates say Snapchat often refuses to cooperate in these investigations.
We have cases where Snapchat was aware of the specific dealer who was dealing fentanyl-contaminated drugs and did not suspend his privileges, did not do anything to keep him from selling drugs.
In a statement, Snapchat told us it works closely with law enforcement and uses cutting-edge technology to find and shut down drug dealers' accounts, block search results for drug-related terms, and redirect Snapchatters to resources about the dangers of fentanyl. The company also launched this PSA last fall about the danger. But critics say until there's third-party oversight of Snapchat's safety measures, nothing will change.
Whatever it is that they say they're doing, it is not enough, and they need to do more.
A source close to Snapchat says the company is not aware of any DOJ investigation. Snapchat says it's working with lawmakers to create greater cooperation between social media companies and law enforcement to try to combat this deadly fentanyl, guys.
All right, Kate Snow. Kate, thank you.
Wow, to another federal investigation. This one into the Southwest Airlines meltdown during the busy holiday travel season. Southwest canceled nearly 17,000 flights over the last 10 days of 2022. And now the federal government wants to know why, if the airline was selling more flights than it could realistically handle. NBC's Tom Costello covers aviation for us. So, Tom, this investigation, what does it mean for the airline?
Well, it means that they're really under the microscope. The Department of Transportation investigation looking into whether Southwest engaged in what the DOT says might have been unrealistic scheduling of flights, promising flights it simply knew it couldn't fly. That would be considered unfair and deceptive under federal law. Southwest blames its December meltdown on its crew scheduling computer system, which went down. And that forced the airline then to go manual, and the cancellations and the delays only snowballed during the bad weather. By the way, most other airlines had no significant problems during that same period. Southwest says it has already taken steps to ensure there is no repeat of the December debacle. Here's what it's done. It's hired a consulting firm to do a full third-party review and then report back with concrete steps. It's working to improve, it says, its crew scheduling software that failed. It's created an operations review committee, and it has handed out rewards points to 2 million passengers who were affected, about a $300 value per person. In a statement, the company tells NBC News, "We will continue to cooperate with any inquiry or request from government oversight or elected officials, and we are acutely focused on learning from this event." You know, listen, Southwest is the country's biggest domestic airline by passenger volume, and the CEO says they recognize that they let those customers down. But listen to this. The meltdown means the company will take a loss of $800 million. It's a massive hit. The company just this morning reporting a loss of 38 cents a share, much bigger than Wall Street expected.
Right. Tom Costello, thank you very much. And tonight, Lester Holt goes one-on-one with Southwest CEO Bob Jordan. He'll have a lot to talk about this new probe, the message to customers, and whether it could happen again. That is tonight on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
7:17. Let's check in with Mr. Roker. Get a check of the forecast. Hey, Al.
Guys, shouldn't be too many airport delays today. Out west, Santa Ana winds blowing around, and so we're going to see some gusty conditions out there. Some afternoon snow with that clipper coming across. We're looking at snow showers across the Great Lakes, cooling off down into the southeast, and we are going to expect cooler temperatures even down as far south as Florida. And that is your latest weather, guys.
Al, thank you. Coming up, we are learning more details this morning about actor Jeremy Renner's snowplow accident. NBC's Kaylee Hartung following that story this morning. Hi, Kaylee.
Hey, Savannah. He has played a superhero in Marvel movies for years, but now we are learning about the real-life heroic actions Renner took that nearly cost him his life. NBC News has obtained a new report that reveals who he was trying to save. We've got the details just ahead.
And then remote work, a thing of the past. The latest workplace trend is returning to the office. Why some employees are saying not so fast. But first, this is Today on NBC.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're back, 7:30, 26th of January, 2023. It is a lovely day in sunny Isles Beach, Florida. Hope it's a lovely day where you are.
It's a lovely day here. Chanel Jones joins the table. Craig is busy this morning. He's in South Carolina. In fact, he's covering the start of that high-profile murder trial involving a powerful attorney. It's a case that's received national attention, so we'll check in with Craig in just a little bit with that story.
That will be fascinating. Mm-hmm. Let's get your headlines. We're 7:30 now. A man accused of killing 7 farm workers in Half Moon Bay, California, appeared before a judge yesterday. 67-year-old Chun Li Zhao is charged with 7 counts of murder and 1 count of attempted murder. Officials say Zhao worked with some of the victims. Allegedly, he told investigators that he had been, quote, disrespected by coworkers in the years leading up to the shootings.
To Detroit now, an investigation underway this morning after somebody fired a gun at a Michigan State Police helicopter. Officials say the man who you see there on the ground initially aimed a green laser at the chopper, and then moments later he pointed a gun at them and started shooting. Nobody was hit. Police on the ground responded, killing the man after he fired at them. A motive still unknown there.
Okay, wow. Well, we've got new details this morning to tell you about Marvel star Jeremy Renner. We know he's recovering from that snowplow accident, and now we're learning what happened in the moments before he was run over by that 7-ton machine. NBC's Kaylee Hartung is here with more. Kaylee, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Savannah. Jeremy Renner is still recovering from blunt chest trauma and more than 30 broken bones after that snowcat crushed him. Now an incident report released by the sheriff reveals that Renner had jumped into action to save a family member.
This morning, new details about the horrific accident that almost killed actor Jeremy Renner near his remote Lake Tahoe home. In a report obtained by NBC News, investigators say the actor was trying to stop his massive piston bully snowplow from hitting his nephew when Renner was completely crushed. Audio of the 911 call captures the frantic moments after the accident.
Immediately, someone's been run over by a snowcat. Hurry.
According to the report, the Avengers star used his 7-ton snowcat to tow a truck operated by his adult nephew, Alexander Freeze, out of the snow. After Freeze disconnected the tow chain, the snowplow began sliding, causing Renner to exit without setting the emergency brake. Renner told investigators he then realized the piston bully began to roll downhill and was heading directly toward his nephew. So he decided to attempt to stop or divert the giant machine. Renner jumped onto its moving track in an effort to get back inside the cab, but was immediately pulled under the left side.
His ribs look like they might be crushed. He's got a head wound as well.
The report says Renner was found approximately 50 feet uphill from the snowcat, which had rolled into the pickup, causing extensive damage. Renner's family and neighbors rendered aid to the actor as they waited for emergency responders to arrive.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood over here, so you got to get somebody over here immediately.
The actor was airlifted to a Nevada hospital, where he stayed for more than 2 weeks, undergoing at least 2 surgeries. Just last week, Renner revealed on social media he broke more than 30 bones. The movie star, who often does his own stunts, is no stranger to injury, as he told Howard Stern in 2017.
It broke both my arms.
Oh,
I got back up
horrible.
And I did the stunt again.
Get out of here.
Oh, my goodness.
On lunch, I went to the hospital. I said, yeah, that's broken. That's broken. And I went back to work.
Now fans are hoping that same resilience will allow Hawkeye to aim for a comeback.
Wow, another layer to that story. Pretty incredible. So do investigators think there may have been something wrong with the vehicle in the first place?
So investigators say that this snowcat appeared to be modified in some way other than it was originally intended to function. So they say there could have been a mechanical issue. They say that the handbrake was functioning properly, but that brake light indicator in the cab wasn't.
Okay.
We have reached out to Piston Bully, but we haven't heard back. Just remember, Jeremy Renner has said on his latest social media post that he is going to come back stronger from this.
Good.
All right. Well, if anyone can.
Yeah. And by the way, welcome in, we should say.
Thank you.
First Today Show piece with us.
This is
good to see you.
This is surreal. You know, I told my mom when I was 10 years old that my goal was to be on the Today Show.
Oh.
Here we are.
Here you are, Kaylee. Manifested.
Yes.
All right.
Very cool.
Nice to have you with us. Coming up, we're going to talk about this miracle moment for parents of conjoined twins.
She's looking and she's like, oh, there's the baby's head. And I was like, well, if that's the baby's head, I was like, what's that? She's like, that's the other baby's head.
Yeah, we were like,
I was like, what? She's like, what? And then everybody kept saying, what?
Well, that was the moment. And now such a good, happy ending here. We'll talk about this historic 11-hour surgery to separate these beautiful baby sisters.
Wow. We look forward to that one. Plus, back to work, literally. Emily Ikeda is here with the return to the office trend. Hey, Em.
Good morning, guys. You know, commuting to the office is becoming more of a routine than occasion as the number of remote job openings is rapidly shrinking. What it means for the future of remote work, coming up.
We're back, 7:40. Today's Consumer Confidential and a look at the state of the workplace. There's a good chance you're getting ready to hop in the car right now and head to the office.
Because more companies are requiring employees to come back, which begs the question, is working from home a thing of the past? Our Emily Ikeda is here with what it all means. Hey, Emily, good morning.
Good morning. While many workers had no choice but to work from home during the pandemic, now virtual flexibility is highly sought after. The number of virtual job listings is quickly dwindling, leaving many people wondering if this is the beginning of the end for remote work.
The days of working from home are fading for more employees, now being called back to the office. Disney recently announcing its employees will be required to spend 4 days a week on site. CEO Bob Iger writing in a letter, "Nothing can replace the ability to connect, observe, and create with peers that comes from being physically together." The media giant among the latest to ramp up time in person in recent months, a move met by frustration from some. Despite high demand, the number of remote roles is rapidly shrinking, according to LinkedIn, making up 13% of job postings compared to 21% less than a year ago.
And a lot of that has to do with employers starting to pull back, starting to say, we are still hiring, but we want you on site. We want you in place.
In search of a hybrid work model, among other things, tech researcher Alicia Takaoka expanded her job search beyond the U.S.
What good is having a house if you don't get to spend it there because you're commuting to work? And what good is having a job if you can't enjoy any time off?
The mounting pressure in the U.S. to return to the office comes as surveys suggest some workers are dialing it back on the job. A new Gallup poll found less than a third of workers are engaged with their position, compared to 36% in 2020.
Are you asking me to overwork myself? It's 2023, Karen. Minimum wage equals minimal effort.
Hashtags like work your wage and quiet quitting catching fire.
You can't expect people to show up, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, but then also ask them to work unreasonable hours and take on tasks that are way outside the scope of their roles.
Career coach Mandy Woodruff-Santos says it's all about striking a balance.
Are you finding more people are valuing work-life balance?
1,000%. What people are valuing more than ever is their own version of what they want their work and their personal lives to look like.
So, I mean, with low unemployment, a lot of people think employees are in the driver's seat. So, yeah. If they want to change their work situation, what are some of the options there?
And especially if people have concerns when it comes to feeling like they're being pushed back to the office, a couple of things that you should keep in mind. The first thing you want to do is make sure you have a full understanding of your company's policies, especially when it comes to understanding the policies around remote work. Prepare a proposal and make sure it leans heavily into how is my situation going to benefit the company? Mm-hmm. And then address any concerns head on. Set up a one-on-one meeting with your manager. One of the things we've seen suffer the most is communication and connection for the past couple of years.
A lot of bosses are saying it's time, though. That's what we're noticing. Yes. That trend is here, too. Yeah.
Definitely see the push in that direction.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Emily. Let's get another look at the forecast from Mr. Roper.
All right, guys. Let's take a look, show you what we got going on. An interesting thing around the Great Lakes. They have near record low ice cover across the Great Lakes. This is a big deal because this is the lake effect snow machine we talk about. Currently, there's only 1% across parts of the Great Lakes to anywhere to 1% to 8%. And the problem is we're talking about average ice cover from 19 to 47% this time of year. Without that ice, that means there's more lake effect snow and damaging winds during storms. So maybe we'll get a chance to build up some of that ice with this cold air coming in out of the plains. Billings today, 19 degrees. That's 20 degrees below average. Minneapolis, 8. Milwaukee, 24. As we move into Sunday, we're going to be looking at those colder temperatures coming into Chicago. You'll be 26. Omaha City, 37 degrees. Denver, 17 degrees. And as we head into the weekend, single digits for Minneapolis. Low teens and 20s for Chicago, mid-40s in Cincinnati. So that cold air is coming, and hopefully we'll start to see some ice on those Great Lakes. And that is your latest weather.
Okay? Thank you. Coming up next, it took a team of surgeons 11 hours and a lot of faith. Sam Brock is covering the historic surgery to separate conjoined twins. Hi, Sam.
It most certainly is, Savannah. The likelihood of having conjoined twins, one in every 200,000 live births. In Fort Worth, Texas, Cook Children's Medical Center had never performed this procedure in its history until now. That story coming up after the break.
Join me, Esther Perel, every Monday in my office on Where Should We Begin? I'm talking to couples and individuals about love and work, about turning conflict into connection. More than ever, our relationships define the quality of our lives. So let's explore the myriad of relational challenges together. See you Monday.
He would lie his way into their dreams.
He was looking for James Bond girls.
How fun would that be to be a Bond girl?
Then twist them into a nightmare.
This guy's done this before. He'll do it again.
Until a group of women banded together to put him behind bars and keep him there.
You have to participate fiercely, fiercely in what happens next.
I'm Keith Morrison, and this is Murder in the Hollywood Hills, an all-new podcast from Dateline.
All episodes of Murder in the Hollywood Hills are available now. To listen ad-free, subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or datelinepremium.com.
We're back 7:48 with a medical miracle. It's being celebrated deep in the heart of Texas.
Surgeons at Cook Children's Medical Center in Fort Worth just successfully performed the hospital's first ever surgery to separate conjoined twins.
Oh, this is incredible. NBC Sam Brock heard from the parents and some of the doctors. He's live. This is a happy story in the end. Sam, good morning.
Yes, Savannah, good morning. Look, as you see from those images right there, part of what makes this so remarkable beyond the rarity of the achievement is the fact, guys, that the hospital documented the journey of the parents, Amanda and James, and took us inside the process of separating the twins. It took 25 people to do it, an 11-hour procedure, and in the end, it confirmed the faith of a couple that had shown such strength.
As they look at the precious faces of their two baby girls, parents James and Amanda appear to maintain hope and humor, even in their incredibly rare and fragile situation, which came to light at a 10-week ultrasound.
She's looking, and she's like, oh, there's the baby's head. And I was like, well, if that's the baby's head, I was like, what's that? She's like, that's the other baby's head.
Yeah, we were like,
I was like, what? She's like, what? And then everybody kept saying, what?
But then the shock of having conjoined twins, so rare it only occurs about once in every 200,000 live births, sunk in.
On the ride home, we were like quiet. And it was kind of sad.
Their girls, Amy Lynn and Jamie Lynn, were joined from the lower part of the breastbone to the belly button and shared a liver, a complex challenge for any medical community.
There is no medical book you're going to open and it says step one conjoined twin separation. That does not exist because of the rarity of this.
But in this case,
all right, again, the ones in the back.
With a team of 25 medical professionals, including six surgeons at Cook Children's Medical Center in Fort Worth, led by Dr. Jose Iglesias, they crafted a playbook and saved not one, but two lives.
Is this a testament to the power of medicine, to the power of the human spirit and faith, to people working together?
I think those are great words. This is a testament to the human spirit to continue to research, to be able to have the technology to do incredible and complex things.
It was the hospital's first conjoined surgery in 105 years, paving the way for this moment.
You have two babies on two separate beds.
Parents crying and embracing and content knowing Amanda can say, Mama's here for the rest of their healthy lives.
Of course, the question everybody wants to know this morning is, how are the girls doing? And according to the doctors, exceptionally well, guys. Now, they said they do need some time to rest. Certainly, their lungs need to heal. There's going to be other steps like getting off the ventilator and off of oxygen, but they are fully expected to live independent, successful lives. And if that is not a miracle and a blessing to these families,
absolutely,
I don't know what is.
Oh,
Back to you.
Oh, my God.
Incredible.
To be able to see the moment when the mother and father learned that those two girls was okay was amazing. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I love the dad. What?
That was amazing.
Thank you, Sam. Chanel, you got pop started a little bit.
We have a lot to talk about today. We're talking about a highly anticipated new series about the rise and fall of rock and roll icons. We have a first look at Daisy Jones and the Six.